This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory.
I am Jose G. Moreno from the Chicano Development Center and Asa Press and Media Association. All this week, the XCC and the RPMA will be conducting a joint live broadcast from the U.S. Social Forum in the heart of Detroit, Michigan, from June 22nd to 26, 2010. In this segment of Radio Free Aslan, we'll be focusing on the militarization of the U.S.-Mexican border and racist and nativist immigration policies in the U.S. Empire. In segment one, a group of Mexican Latino activists and organizers will provide us with their perspectives on these burning topics.
What is your name, organization, and location?
My name is Benjamin Prado. I'm the editor of La Verdad newspaper, a member of Unión del Barrio, and come from Southern California, San Diego, California.
Ignacio Meneses, I am one of the coordinator of the Latinos Unidos of Michigan here in Detroit, y también del U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange.
As we are broadcasting live at the U.S. Social Forum, we can see the nation of Canada just across the river. You can see the hotels, businesses, casinos on the Canadian side of the border. Where are the triple fences and the border patrol? As you look across the river, you don't even realize you're in a different country. In your opinion, why is the U.S.-Mexican border militarized by the U.S. hegemonic government? Why is this a major contradiction?
Well, first of all, the militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border is nothing new. It's a result of the ongoing military occupation, invasion, and now political repression against the Mexican people in general, but Raza in particular. We say this because in 1848, the U.S. invaded the U.S. Southwest, or what is now known as Southwest United States, and imposed a political, social, economic order on Raza and Mexicans in particular, converting us into foreigners on our own land. So the militarization of the border is a policy of genocide. It's a policy of terror. It's a policy of calculated death. It's imposed as a result of the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, or more rigorously enforced because of the attempt to regulate migrant labor from coming to the United States to find work because of economic policies that force people into poverty and migration from the South.
I think this is a continuation of the new colonization from the United States to the Mexican people. They find any excuse, always, historically, they always try to find excuses to intimidate, scare the people. In this case, right now, it's about the immigration who is coming, which are these undocumented workers are victims of the policies of the new liberal policies imposed from the U.S. government and the transnationals to the Mexican people. The other excuse is about the drugs. And here, I think we should first try to stop the consumption of drugs in this country, in the United States. And how you can see, they try to avoid to deal with the problem, blaming the Mexican people, especially in the border. And I think it's just these excuses that they find they find to continue the new colonization of the Mexican people. What are things are coming from the Mexican people? Good things. What? Labor. These undocumented workers help to produce and to the wealth of this country. They buy cheap raw materials from Mexico too, and has been and never has been at one single terrorist attacks coming from the Mexican people to this country. But how I say before is just to continue the neocolonization of the Mexican people. That's the reason.
Since 1990s, the state of Arizona has been a major center for nativist and racist immigration policies that have targeted Mexican Latinos in that state. As a result, Arizona has become the Alabama of the Southwest. What is your perspective about this matter? Why is this anti-Mexican Latino backlash occurring in the state of Arizona?
First reasons is really to contain the political power of raza in general, Mexicans in particular. It's really to contain the growing movement that is being generated as a result of more awareness, more consciousness as to who we are, what the main problems are, the economic crisis that is provoking and creating a very clear apartheid state to limit the rights of migrant workers in particular, raza in general. It's to annihilate, to begin to systematically dehumanize our communities, and really to make a white America and eliminate that the growing numbers of raza, not only in that states, but throughout the United States.
Well, we are seeing then the system, the capitalist system, is in a deep crisis. Many wars, the economy is a shambles, workers are losing so many benefits, so many gains that they won with the labor struggles. And because they are in, the system is in crisis, and there is no perspective to resolve the problems, they had to come this, the worst type of conservative for in the system, the Republican Party, and the worst kind, who come with ideas or these laws, new fascist laws, who try to repress and blame the undocumented workers or the problems. That is what we are going to, will they continue this, but we will defeat them. We saw just a few months ago how this new fascist, Lou Dobbs from CNN, he was had the opportunity to have few hours a week to talk about all these racist attacks against undocumented people, and we know it's a history. That guy is out. But the same way, we are going to defeat them because really the American people, the working people in the United States, don't accept this type of new fascist laws. And I think we are very sure we are on the right track and we are going to defeat them.
And I think another important point, because of the crisis that is happening precisely because of the economic crisis, is that those that are perpetuating these laws, primarily corporations and think tanks, of the corporations, are trying to they are actually lying and saying that somehow most, you know, Americans agree with this law. The poll that they put out there is a poll that only polled, I think, 1,000 people in a very small majority white town that is very pro-military. And it was an attempt to really fabricate and create a lie that somehow most people do believe this. The reality is that do believe in the law. I think the reality is that, like Ignacio mentioned, there's a growing working class consciousness that is emerging even within the United States, primarily led by raza in the streets, demanding immigration reform. But this growing class consciousness, awareness of who we are, that we produce the actual wealth of this country, and the fact that with our numbers we create the majority of working people here in the United States and throughout the continent, is having a class awareness and a class consciousness makes this even much more dangerous for the capitalists, for the people who are actually running this country. And what that means is that they have to actually start repressing and that growing movement by destroying and attacking Mexicans in particular, and creating this fascist laws that will criminalize everybody for doing anything, even including protest. And so I think that's a important way of actually exposing the lies is through denouncing the human rights atrocities and violations. That's nothing new, but I think what makes it new today is how we engage this struggle. I mean, we wanna definitely show and denounce the human rights violations that are happening not throughout the country, but particularly in the border region. And that's why one of the issues of the border is, you know, the issue of the growing militarization of that border. And you know, our struggle is really to expose it, and number one, to build an alternative movement, in this case, a movement for national liberation, for our rights, for socialism and raza self-determination.
In 2006, the U.S. House of Representatives passed H.R. 437. This racist and nativist immigration policy caused one of the largest Mexican-Latinos immigrant rights movements in the U.S. empire. This movement organized large May Day marches in Chicago, Illinois, Los Angeles, California, Detroit, Michigan, and other locations in the U.S. empire. With mass protests, H.R. 437 was overturned by the U.S. Senate. What is your perspective about the immigrants' rights movement? Was there an immigrants' rights movement prior to the development of H.R. 437? Do you think a slimmer bill like H.R. 437 will be developing in the near future?
Well, I think that movement for immigrant rights is not a new one. It happened. It's been developing, I would say, even since the early 1990s, or even as soon as the last bill took effect, the Immigration Reform and Responsibility Act, which further criminalized people. But even back into 1986, which is the law that regularized something like 3 million people. But in exchange, the government came down and imposed the militarization of the border as part of its strategy to contain labor. So I think that as the movement has been in existence, hasn't been as popularized. And I think today, more than ever, we see that there are social movements, because the crisis, the political crisis, the economic crisis that is forcing people to leave and migrate is that much more acute. It's that much more sharper, and the contradiction is becoming uncontainable and unsustainable for the system to be able to do it through its regular means. Regular means would have been as what it had done historically, which is simply regulate a couple people, you know, the guest worker programs, keep them at those paces in to benefit labor. But the number of people, just the amount that's leaving their countries because of economic policies such as NAFTA, is so great that now it has to deal with the issue of more people coming, and now that those same people's being having their rights stripped away from them, and that growing emergence of a movement as a reaction, and that's what it is. It's a reactive movement to these policies that strip our rights away, our community's rights away. I think that's why H.R. 4437, you saw such the numbers of people coming out. That's why today, now with the Arizona law, you see more people coming out, is because more and more our rights are being stripped away. But before that, those same rights were still restricted, but they weren't enforced as they are today with the policies of going into people's homes and taking people away, as racial profiling and checkpoints all over the place, the amount of infrastructure such as police and migrateur coming into our communities, taking us off buses, throwing us in concentration camps called prisons. I think that's why there's now a greater awareness that something fundamental has to change, and that fundamental change has to deal with destroying capitalism. Capitalism is a system, an economic system, that commoditizes our basic human needs. Housing, education, healthcare, even the right to work is being criminalized under these immigration bills. And so what our task is to reclaim, number one, our humanity by identifying and understanding that we as human beings have all these rights, and number two, organizing ourselves in defense of those rights. And number three is fundamentally changing this economic system, challenging and destroying capitalism so that we can create a social system that respects our basic human rights, that guarantees us the right to work, that guarantees us the basic things such as housing, food, and education. And that's the solution that we push forward, that our movement is not about changing the immigration laws or reforming the immigration laws. But in fact, it's a step. It's really our task is to change and alter and destroy this capitalist system. But in order to get there, we have to be aware that this is an issue of class struggle, that our class interest as working people has to do with building socialism. And the only way we can do that is by uniting our struggle with the struggle that is happening and emerging from the South, which is the examples of Bolivia, of Venezuela, of Cuba, of building economic models that are sustainable and protect and defend the rights of people.
Definitely, but we are confident that it will be a new, just a humane immigration reform. Here the U.S. government go around the world saying that it's a civilized country, democracy and human rights and all that, while it's very hard for them to continue with that, because we saw it just recently in a visit to the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, when she went to Ecuador. She was forced to say they had to do something against this law, 1070 in Arizona. How we can see is the contradictions are coming more out. The U.S. government is having a hard time to continue to lie the people, not just international, but internal. And I think that's what is going to make make a change, make the pressure is coming out. How they can continue to bring this new fascist law, like in Arizona, against to people, working people, undocumented working people in the United States, which are people who contribute to the wealth of the United States, are coming just to support their families, and these are victims. The undocumented workers are victims of the same laws they impose in Latin America. With these new liberal policies like NAFTA, CAFTA, continue to devastate the economy of these countries. And obviously, when they cannot find jobs in their countries, they are forced to come to any country who has jobs. And this has been the case of the United States, the few jobs that they are left. And this is the contradiction that they is showing, in which the United States is having a harder and harder time to cover. And that's the reason why we think pretty soon the movement is growing. We are confident that this law is going to be defeated, the 1070 in Arizona, and because we believe that we are in the right track.
In 1848, the U.S. imperial government took over half of Mexico land in the aftermath of the U.S.-Mexican War and the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo. The U.S. hegemonic government claimed the regional dominance of Las Americas during the late 19th century. What is your perspective about nativist and racist immigration policies in the U.S. empire? Is this a new or old phenomenon?
Yeah, I think the whole concept of nativism, I think, is just even the word, I think, is a misnomer. And the reason why is because, these so-called nativists have nothing native about them. And in fact, they're settlers. They're the foreigners. They're the ones that came on boats. They're the ones who crossed rivers. They're the ones who occupy our land. They're the ones who stole our land and created and began this war against indigenous and real native people of this continent. So there's nothing native or nativist about them. We say that they're settlers. And second of all, this movement has been a movement since the first day, since the first European came, since Columbus first sailed and landed on the Americas. You know, that movement is a movement to continue to enslave us, to continue to strip away our humanity, continue to steal our resources, both natural and human resources, meaning our steal and benefit from our labor. And so this movement is nothing new. It's a continuation of the very same people that came and promote the very concept of the United States of America, you know, this concept of this nation state as a white power, white America capitalist state that lives off the body of indigenous peoples, African peoples, and the labor of the majority of raza and people of this continent. But more than that, it's the same people that justify wars of occupation in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries around the world, precisely to strip away and suck resources from those countries. It's the same people that promote war and occupation abroad and in our own communities, creating small communities of police, barrios that are full of immigration and customs enforcement, as well as police departments that take away our cars, for example. So there's, you know, that movement is nothing new. It's something that we've had to deal with for more than 500 years.
Well, no, definitely this is nothing new. They did it to just recently with the African American, the black people. As a matter of fact, this law, the Arizona, the 1070, is basically a copy of the Slave Act that used to happen in the 1800s against to slave people. They first tried to criminalize the victim in order then they have the excuse to implement these laws, and this is what they are doing. This is historically has been like that. It's nothing new about that. I think that, well, and that's what after they criminalize the undocumented workers, they think that they can do anything they want to. And how the Benjamin said, you know, they are they invade. They used to have the people from Europe who came and in the 1800s, when they would, you know, the WAP, was it that mean without papers? They were the ones without papers. Nevertheless, we, the people from Latin America, which has indigenous blood, you can see in the Mexican, the Latin American, it's a brown people with that blood of the indigenous, and this is what we have. How we are now foreign thing in the north part of the or our continent, and I think that this is nothing new. It has been history has shown us that they've been repeating and repeating in order to continue to repress us.
According to nativist and racist hegemonic perspectives, Mexican Latinos do not have any type of human and civil rights and historical claims to the U.S. empire. What is your perspective about these statements? In your opinion, do Mexican Latinos have human and civil rights in the U.S. empire?
Not within its laws. I think that's the fundamental contradiction, is that the laws of this nation state, starting with this constitution, was primarily to protect and defend private property of white landowners, slave owners. In fact, when it was written, when the constitution was written, it was written precisely to ensure that the land that was stolen continue to be under the protection and under the state protection of these white landowners, and the slaves that were brought over, kidnapped from Africa and brought here to work, were to be defended and by the state to ensure that free labor for those landowners. So under the state laws, under the nation state as the USA as it exists, we as workers are not considered human beings. We don't have the rights under this nation state. So that's why, you know, our issue and our task is to go beyond this nation state and say, no, we do have human rights. because universally it's understood that human rights apply to everybody, that regardless of whether it says we're illegal or not in this country, we still have claim to our own humanity. We still have claim to the labor that we produce. We still have claim to what we create. And, you know, the very concept that Zapata put out there, Emiliano Zapata, a great revolutionary hero, he said the land belongs to those that work it. And because we do work the land, because our people do work the land, because we do build houses, we do build buildings, we do create and produce goods, we have claim to those resources that we produce and that, in fact, have and continue to be stolen from us. The case in point, I think, today is the issue of the oil of Mexico in particular being stolen by U.S. corporations and trying to be privatized. That's the reflection of how the nation state is able to go into other parts of the world and try to impose its own its sovereignty, or its not its sovereignty, but its power and its hegemony on other countries and other nations.
It's obviously, if we ask to the oppressor, to the exploiter, if working people has rights, obviously they will say no, because that's what they want to. They want to criminalize, make us think that we don't have no rights. But definitely, obviously, there's no question about it. Of course we have rights. We have rights as a human being, as a worker, and we are going to defend it. They've been trying to exterminate. They will not been able to do that. They know we are people which we've been proved, and we struggle for our rights. We will do it, and we will win.
You know, workers' rights that respects the, that in fact creates jobs and improvements in healthcare, education, and we recognize that movement in the sense that we as workers here, as a movement here that does believe in challenging these repressive immigration laws, is to unite our struggle as a working class struggle with the struggles that are happening down in the South and eventually creating a continental unity that's sustainable.
Also, I want to say thank you to Radio Free Aztlan for this interview. And I want to invite the people then to be with us 15 minutes from the border of San Diego and Tijuana. We are organizing for the 7 year a conference, an international conference, a Cuba, Venezuela, Mexico, North America Labor Conference. This is the 7 years that we are having this. Here we are discussing especially the U.S. Latin American relations, and we're going there in a deep discussions about the alternative of ALCA, the Free Trade Agreement, which we is support is ALBA. In this discussion, we will have representatives or members of the ALBA countries. Representatives from Cuba, Venezuela, Ecuador, Nicaragua. It also we have representatives from Mexico, the U.S., and other countries of Latin America. Also, we will discuss the issue of immigration, especially with the organizers of the May Day demonstration, the historic now May Day demonstrations. This conference is in Tijuana, and it's the first weekend of December, the first weekend, which is 3, 4, and 5 of December of this year. If you want more information, you can contact in California Unión del Barrio, or you can send an email to the U.S.-Cuba Labor Exchange, which is easy. It's laborexchange@aol.com. Thank you.
And finally, the panel discussions that we will have here at the U.S. Social Forum will be Thursday, June 24th from 1 to 5 in room D211 in Cobo Hall. And that's going to be talking about the Bolivarian Alliance of the Americas, as well as the struggle of May 1st and immigration reform and how that relates to our solidarity work with Cuba, Venezuela, and Bolivia.
I would like to thank our speakers for a wonderful critical analysis
on the militarization of the U.S.-Mexican border and nativist and racist immigration policies in the U.S. empire. To sum up this segment is to point out that only a counter-hegemonic, anti-imperialist, anti-capitalist, anti-colonial struggle will change the social and political conditions for Mexican Latino population in Las Americas. In closing, this is the only organizational ideological framework that would make another word possible, a reality in the U.S. empire.
This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
Of the best.